Man, you idiots. I cannot believe you two. You are something else. I mean, you are nothing but two selfish little pigs.
Oh, we're on. I was just leaving a message for Dick Cheney and our illustrious President George W. Bush. I apologize. Anyway, as you know, I'm Andrew Fetter, and welcome to When Pigs Fly, coming from you live from the lovely city of Las Vegas, Nevada, where what happens here stays here, including, of course, your money when you put your little coin in the slot machines. And I want to thank BBS Radio for having me on their show, and I also thank all the listeners out there and future listeners and future archives. Well, today's show happens to be the Happy Mother's Day show, and first of all, I want to say Happy Mother's Day to all those mothers or mothers-to-be or future mothers-to-be. And before I get into the parameters on my rant regarding a lot of lies and untruths within organized religions and politics and spirituality regarding the feminine or feminism and women, I'd like to make a couple special announcements. First of all, so you all know, in 2 weeks, on the May 25th show, I will be having my first special guest. His name is Lewis Martin. He has a website, a blogger site, which is very unique. I know if you, any of you check out, like, on the progressive sites, like Crooks and Liars. He is very similar to Crooks and Liars, but with dealing with UFOs and paranormal. I mean, y'all should check it out. It's called myufo.com, myufo.com. And, yes, amazing stuff. He shows from UFOs to haunted houses to he picks up clips from old classic Vincent Price movies, and he also has this unique way of writing, and it's very straight to your face, sort of like what I try to do in this show. At least I try to, anyway. Anyway, so he's going to be on my guest in 2 weeks, so I look forward to that, and you're all just tune in to that. That'd be great. Now, I also have another special announcement. Tomorrow, May 12th, this Saturday from 1 to 5 p.m., I'm having a book signing event here in Las Vegas at the Psychic Eye Bookstore on 6848 West Charleston. And if you're coming to Vegas, well, I hope to see you there. If you want, talk, chat, check out my book, whatever. If you happen to be already here, come on by. It's a very more laid-back way. I do this every now and then type of book signing. So that's my two announcements. So anyway, getting back now, thinking about what's coming up when it comes to Mother's Day, think of a lot of the issues come up because I think of, you know, the Mother Earth, and everybody talks about the female side and the women's side of within religion and in politics, and now they're, you know, with now the, especially within the United States, the possibility of having a first woman president, and we've already had the first time we've had a woman house, the Speaker of the House. So I think the sort of ironic that America is finally slowly moving into an age where it's sort of and allowing women to empower into an equal time and space as far as empowerment. Gradually, it's slowly sort of ironic. We're supposed to be so far ahead, but yet so far backward, even compared to a lot of other countries that have already had women leaders and women presidents. But I want to get to issues of certain things and dynamics and response or relations to, first of all, organized religions. And when I talk about organized religions, I'm going to talk about relating to women as far as where they stood in not the real sense of what they're supposed that they should have been, but what end up happening across history lines as far as organized religion within the Judeo-Christian as well as Islamic and including Hinduism and as well as Buddhism as well. And it seems cross-culture and why a phenomenon that happened toward women and why they were subjugated to be placed into a substandard form, ironic, when it shouldn't have been. You know, it's very contrary to the truths of spirituality within organized religions, or supposed to be, but they obviously did it otherwise. And I'll get back to what I mean by that. And I'll also get into the real essence of the feminine side, because people also tend to mix between what feminism within, when they say, hey, you're feminine side, and whatnot. And by the way, for all you men out there, yeah, I do have my, I'm holding on my gonads, and I will have maintained them. I'm not giving up anything by empowering women. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You don't lose anything. But let me talk about, first of all, within the like Judeo-Christian, you know, and if you go within the Bible itself, and you know, people that you read about Adam and Eve and that story, of course they leave out Lilith. Lilith was actually Adam's first wife, and she was born at the same time, or created at the same time as Adam, but was conveniently removed because of her demand to be equal to Adam, and Adam wanted to subdue her, which is ironically written in some of the books of Zohar, which is in Kabbalistical books, relating to those stories of what happened to Lilith. And of course they demonized her all of a sudden because, you know, she stood up. And I think they more or less made her into an evil thing, which is another issue. And they've always made that, by the way. That's a constant. If a woman stood up, they'd make her into something wrong, something bad, you know. And so what was even the Eve, let's say, she was, you know, what was she within the Bible in relationship with Adam? I mean, she didn't come when, according to the Bible in Genesis or Bereshit, she didn't come from his foot. She didn't come from his butt. She came from the rib, meaning almost like equal. So there was a genuine underlying factor that women were equal. And then the essence of their, even within the Bible, and this gives another empowerment where which underlying people tend to lose factor of what it was. It was when Eve listened to talked to the serpent at the tree in the Garden of Eden, and you know, and got the, and everybody knows the story about the apple, which really is an apple, but it was a fruit of knowledge, of knowing right and wrong. Convinced Adam to take a bite of it as well, you know. And that actually was a positive, not a negative thing, because it was to give the opportunity of choice. And obviously she had, at that time, her own mind, the opportunity to choose, which Adam ironically didn't, which says something in that very story, that woman had already been empowered to choose. She already had a sense of self-worth before even a man had. Now, mind you, when I get back into spirit, which is another whole thing, I believe in there's reincarnation, souls come back and forth. In fact, when some people tend to be more likely to be in male, and they have to be more into male embodiments or female embodiments, and some switch back and forth, and that's why you have the crosses of transgenders and confusions of sexuality within the male species and things like that. So, which is a whole other story. I don't want to get into that right now, but I will down the road. But the empowerment issues and where women were within the Bible and Judaically and so on, starting off from, like I said, from the Judaic Christian side, and then I'll move forward. But within the own Bible, there was an empowerment for women. I mean, it says right there. I mean, in their own book, very start, that's a very brief. So women did have that empowerment. They were on equal level or more so, in fact. So what happened down the line? There was something was happening that changed a lot of circumstances. In which doesn't make any sense if you watch the course of what happened through from the prophets on. Because you look in the very beginning, the most important thing they keep on bringing up, they say the God of Isaac, God of Abraham, nobody talks about, you know, Sarah, Rivka, or the four matriarchs, Rachel, of the matriarchs of Jews, their four mothers. Nobody really speaks of that, but that's very important because it's so ironic. In Judaism, for example, you're a Jew you're a Jew by your mother, not by your father. And they say that your mother passes on your spirituality to your children. So there's definitely empowerment, but what's really ironic is even though that is the very case, it was removed of what women were. They were placed as basically property, things. In fact, in Hebrew back in then, they called, like, the husband was called Baal, and the woman was simply called Isha. And Baal means owner. owner of this woman. And so there was already that mindset. And why was this case and within even organized religion as it progressed from Judaism and through Christianity and so on so? And the reason I keep on asking that question, why, and there's a very simple, very easy answer to it, and you all come to mind what that reason is. But as time progressed, it kept on the same status. You don't hear within the Bible, you have stories of Deborah being a great warrior. You have little instances here and there, and there are in there, but none are really emphasized of women within the Bible. Within the Christian Bible, on the New Testament, of course, I'm not even going to relate to the scriptures that have conveniently been not placed in it, or canonized, if they call it. And I'm talking about Mary Magdalene's writings, and of course, the Book of Thomas, and so on, which relate to the empowerment of women and Jesus having his wife, Mary Magdalene, excuse me, and the equality within that and the empowerment of what Mary was, the mother, and why is it the father and the son, and they always talk of God in the he form. Which is ironically because if you're in Hebrew and throughout all the name of God, all the names of God, there are both both in masculine tense and feminine tense. In fact, Shaddai is one of God's names, which literally means my breast, which is commonly used within the very beginning. And then there was a neutral non-gender name of God, but in English, and I know they have to place a name, they use he, which sort of brings up a little joke I remember I heard from a long time ago. I don't want to really tell jokes here, but I'll just do it. What the hell? There's this guy, and he's real sarcastic, thinks he knows everything. And he goes up into heaven. And for the angels that let him in heaven, they think, we're not going to let you in here because you're just a smart ass. You think you know everything. So we'll tell you, well, we'll give you three questions. If you answer all three of them, we'll let you in. First question they ask them, okay, how many days in the month start with a T. And of course, the smart aleck guy says, oh, that's easy. There's four. And the angel says, what? Four? Well, there's only Tuesday and Thursday that start with a T. And then he goes, what? There's today and tomorrow. And then the angel says, okay, how many seconds are there in a year? And the guy says, that's pretty easy. There's only 12. And the angel says, what do you mean 12? There's more than 12. And he says, no, there's January 2nd, February 2nd, and so on, March 2nd. So he goes, the last one is, nobody really knows God's real name because we just know the consonants. They don't know even how to pronounce it. I bet you don't know God's real name. And he says, yeah, I do. His name is Andy. And he goes, how do you figure it's Andy? And he created earth, Andy part of the sea, our heart. So there is always a he. Yet, they don't say she is God. And there's a reason for that, why they did that too. It was a sort of a propaganda way of influence. Again, I ask why they did that. Why was, even though it's not the truth, why did they flip it? And yet you go through all the prophets, like I said, throughout the Bible. What happened to all the women? How come there's only male prophets? You don't think for a second there were women prophets? You don't think for a second there were great women had spiritual inclinations and had closeness with God and heard things and, you know, and prophesied future events or great healers? How come there's not any of it disclosed within the Bible? I'm asking you why. Is it just a male society at that time? But is that a lie? I mean, how much different? You don't think for a second there were women who had prophesied things, or maybe it was conveniently pulled out. And this is where I get into where some of the issues within the Bible and have been manipulated and yanked out. And I've mentioned it into my book, by the way. I'm also the author of When the Angels Have Risen. And if you ever want to check out my website, www.andrewfetter.com. But again, why was it conveniently yanked out? Why weren't they in there? Why weren't there women emphasized? Why aren't there mentioning? Why aren't there a list of, like, there's Ezekiel and Isaiah? Why isn't there a Rachel or other woman prophets? I mean, there's very little. And then when you go into the other side, you go further on along toward the New Testament into the Gospels. How come there's Mark? How come there's a Matthew? How come there's only males were his disciples? And then they conveniently, even though she was one of his closest, and we think, and I personally believe his wife, was Jesus' disciple was Mary Magdalene. How come that is not talked about? Why was that she conveniently yanked out? Well, there's, again, a reason why. And you can go on and on throughout Judaic and Christian situations. And you can go through even the hierarchies of both religions. Look at in the Catholic Church. How come there's no woman pope? Why isn't there a woman priest? Those are obvious from the histories of Canaan's what the Catholic Church did toward women. Again, why? In fact, there's a great book called, I think it's called The Dark Side of Christian History of Christianity or something like that by Helen Entebbe. I'm sure if you Google it, you'll find it, but it has a great, gets into the actually how Christianity developed from the Canaan's and what we people think of what is organized religion of modern Christianity today, is how it really evolved out of Roman theology as opposed to out of Judaism. And it was contrary to what Jesus and the original origin of Christianity really is and was. But it gets into that's the subject of modern Christianity toward women. And there is another reason why as well. On that side, as far as within Christianity, why they put women in a situation, and there was a dual purpose for that. Subjugating, by the way, women to a, thinking them as second, like the second species, or lower, taking away their empowerment. Oh, I'm giving it away. So you go through like the clerics within Christianity. Yeah, there are some modern now Protestants who have their women in ministries, but in general, it is a masculine theologies. Even in, within Judaism, you don't hear too many women rabbis, women writers, women scribes. In fact, they say they only talk about men studying Kabbalah in the Orthodox sense. And though that, like, just like I said, within modern Christianity, there is, and I'm talking about some Protestants within the ministries, they have ministers who are women and reverends and so on and so. There are, like, in the more reform or, I guess, conservative movements that have women as rabbis who go to rabbinical study rabbinical theology. But again, generally, it's empowered by men. And then if you go into Islam, hell, what is very ironic, and I know I'm going to piss off a lot of Muslims, but if you read what the history of the Prophet Muhammad was and his wife, he was his bitch. That's plain and simple. Yet, he looked up to his wife, got all his theologies and his encouragement by his wife. In fact, she was the one who had the money, and she had the caravan and sent his little ass down the line in his little caravan to go, you know, sell them, be a merchant of her business. Again, he was... basically, she was his boss. And it's ironic now within the Islamic society, it's flipped around. Isn't that ironic? Muhammad was his wife's bitch, basically. And I'm saying derogatory to about that because the ugliness which I see within Islamic society toward what it's done to women. Instead of the truth, the real truthfulness, and I'm saying that within the Quran, but there are very elements within Quran that really do make women less. And I now understand that the society was, at that time, and even still, women are looked down upon or less. But there's why again? Why did they do this? And you know, by the way, here, obviously, any women imams or mullahs, you don't hear about any lineage at all, period, within Islamic about women having any empowerment. And it's sort of, and then what do they do? And this is also within both in Judaic and Christian about the vanity of women. Oh, they got to cover up their hair. God forbid if a guy sees their hair. God forbid if guy sees a part of their leg or their arm or their shoulder or their face. We all have different levels. But it's always the woman has a problem. It's the guy, though it's the guy's problem. If he can't handle it, he sees some beautiful woman, why do they take that away? They cover her up. There's, again, a reason why. It's a method that is employed within these organized religions to demean women. Again, why? And then if you go with even in Buddhism, even though it's such an enlightened religion, and many of it, even they don't cause really wars, but again, they even have their own issues with women too. How come you don't hear, see women monks, women theologists within Buddhism? It's mainly men. Why is there a Dalai Lama and not a Dalai Lama girl, let's so speak? Again, why? And obviously in Hinduism, women, Ironically, they, within Hinduism, they have women gods that they pray to, yet the level where women are in society, and it's sort of ironic because they have a dual thing, because, I mean, they even had a Hindus, I mean, India did have a, with Gandhi being a president, it was sort of ironic having, and there are women leaders within the Indian community, which is sort of, I think, an ironic situation. But then the underlying tone of their organized religion is almost like they put a ball and chain on women to move up. I mean, for a man to move up in that society, it doesn't take much, but a woman has to go leap and leap frogs in order to move up. So again, why? And I'll tell you why. It's pretty damn simple. If you can submit and take the self-worthiness of an individual and tell them you are less, and you beat them down and beat them down and beat them down, that you're nothing, you're less than me, 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 and take away their self-worthiness and make them feel insecure consistently by doing that, and then doing it with not just within religion but a societal way, guess what? That's one half the population that you have to worry about controlling, because they're already in control. Even though I think control is an illusion, but that illusion is manifested and created to control. So if you can control half the population, now you just have to worry about the other half. So is it really for religious purposes? Yeah, partially, some of it. Because, you know, he who sits on the, what they say, the golden thing rules or whatever, I can't probably sound like George Bush with mentioning that saying now, but basically, he who sits on who's in power makes the rules. And so if you got half the population, or roughly half, I think there's, I think population-wise there's more women than men, but there you go. You got all that taken care of. Take them, don't even give them a right to vote. Don't make them less or make them think them less. And you keep on doing that for years and thousands of years. And, you know, just make kids and have babies and all have a couple of mistresses on the side. Yeah, give them here and there, making feel. And there have been women who tried to empower themselves. And, of course, we know what happens to them. They end up like Joan of Arc. So what happens? To keep on pushing them down, like pushing them down, to keep them in their spot. Again, it was control. You got half the population. You got to have over half controlled. Now you can just worry about dealing with the men. And, of course, you deal with the men by telling them, well, you got to do this and this and this, and that's another form of control. And that's a whole other story, and I've already related about that in previous programs. And I don't want to embellish on that because today's show is for women. So that empowerment was taken away from women. And it was just to control them, to make them less, so that the way half the population's under control. I mean, look at Islamic society, for example. There's a clear case of how to control. If you have, like, within Saudi Arabia, for example, a more of a clear picture of a society, or Iran, for example, of what happens when you can control half the population. It's just another quicker move or a closer of a totalitarian society where you can dictate what you want happen. If you are the leader of the clerics or the king, and the reason why you're king is because of, they say, because of God who made you king. Oh, because I was born that way. God made it that way. That's how you became a king. It's tied in with religion, which made an excuse to control half the population. Again, that is why. So half the population is under control. And then you have circumstances which evolves even today in modern politics and modern societal situations, again, where we have women who, in general, and, you know, I hate to say it, there is having a complex of lack of self-esteem, lack of self-worthiness. You know, why is it that women have to utilize their sexuality in order to empower themselves? They have to look good. They have to dress good. They have to look pretty. That's the sexual empowerment. But it's not really their real, true essence of who they are. And then even within our society, it's like, an example, I remember, and this is coming from a girl, by the way, an old girlfriend, I remember telling me about, with him, talking about American society now, that American women, and now I'm generalizing, so don't all the American women are emailing me, screaming up and down, I'm not like that at all. But it's called the Cinderella effect. And wanting the, you know, Prince Charming to sweep them away. And if you look on from old cartoons and the hero saving the day, and look at even Spider-Man and all the cartoons and Batman, and how the man saves the woman, the man, male hero saves the woman. You know, that's subjugated to little kids and ingrained and goes all the way forward, and making women feel like they have to be saved. There's going to be somebody that's going to come down the line and Prince Charming and swooping them off their feet. He's going to have a lot of money, or he's going to have, you know, be, you know, basically a lot of money. The Prince Charming. And poor little girl, damsel in distress. Why is that put in there? It's very obvious to think, make, let the societal think a woman can't have no power and they need a man in order to save them. And I think it's sort of ironic that there's the insecurity, insecurity amongst men who have, because of that, have a reciprocal lack of self-esteem, because they feel that they may have to embellish that a woman has to be less than them in order to have them, their own masculinity, their own pride, they can hold on to their gonads and feel all masculine and tough, because they are afraid that a woman being empowered. I mean, look what's happening. If I took Hillary, for example, if I look in politics right now, what's going on in the U.S. for the first time, a really serious chance of a woman being president. And if I change Hillary to Harold Clinton, the emphasis on her wouldn't be that much. I mean, they look at her speech and when she says, oh, wow, this, she's, you know, some people, whatever your policy, liberal, conservative, moderate, whatever you want to put that stamp, you would just listen to her statements and look at it as what she is. But then they say a woman. They look at her as a woman, possibly being president. Look what they did with Nancy Pelosi when she first became the first House Speaker. They created the fear of a woman being a House Speaker. Oh, that crazy woman from San Francisco. That crazy woman. Woman. They don't say crazy congressman or congresswoman. Of course, they have the woman on her. And then I even heard women, even today, you know, and colleagues of mine who, you know, I asked them what they thought about Hillary becoming a president. They first said, oh, my God. You know. Can you imagine having a woman president? She'll have those, what happens when she has her PMS every other month? You know, because they've been trained that in their own minds, they've been with these tapes that women can't have any equality as far as empowerment. Yet, ironically, I mean, look at the Senate, I mean, and in Congress, I mean, there's been more and more women slowly moving up and being more of a status quo of part of the government, in essence. And also, it's happening within corporate, slowly within American society. But still, that's mind thought. It's still stamped and ingrained. This is how much that's been done. It's part of that controlling thing. It's been ingrained from organized religion, and it's now percolated within politics. It's always been like that, mixed and merged. Now, I was going to get into another issue. I forgot. And before I get off what I'm trying to get to, and there was an issue about why Christianity did evolve And very, besides wanting to the control factor of women and putting them down, there was another issue why women became an issue. Let me explain you why. Modern Christianity, in fact, Orthodox Christianity, which spread out through Europe, its counterpart was paganism. And a lot of paganists had empowered a feminism within their own religions. And also there was a connection of nature. And since a lot of pagans worship nature in retrospect, the elements of nature, for example, which is part of, for example, Wicca, the light side of Wicca, let me put it that way. Not those people who think they're Wicca, but worshiping Satan, all that's just a bunch of BS. But the from the very core of original paganism, which is just a form, really not a mono, it's not a poly religion, it's more of just believing, it is a poly in some sense, but it's basically believing in the elements, again, of nature. And what happened within Christianity, if I'm talking about now of Orthodox Christianity, not of Christianity of originate, which is the agnostic Christianity, the original, real Christianity, they wanted to separate man, his soul, and said that the nature is dirty. And therefore, if nature is dirty and ugly and dark and evil, and since women worship were part of the pagan ceremonies embracing nature as being part, that where they're one with nature, they must be as well dirty. And if a man looked at a woman, he got all excited. That was part of that ugliness that they created, that they lied. So therefore, she was simply turned as evil. And that was through their theology of Christianity. And so that was part of the process. So it was like a dual process, making it look less like ugliness, you know, and then to embracing, you know. It's like, what is Mother Earth, you know? That concept, Mother Earth, originally is from, actually, ironically, from Native American Indians, which have a different, by the way, look upon women. There's some Native Americans that have totally equality and empowerment. And then there's some who basically did look at women as not giving them the empowerment, the same token. So it's all across the board through a lot of spirituality and situations. But like I was getting back into within Christianity, I mean, that own ugliness of nature. I mean, they even took Pan, if you really know the concept of the devil was created of Pan. Pan was the Greek god of nature, the goat with the horns. Take him, you turn him into the devil. That's the devil. That's the modern devil. There was no such thing as, by the way, devil in Judaism, and that was basically created out of the mythology, out of Greek mythology, and that's how that form of canonized ideas of Orthodox Christianity, which today's Christianity, both Protestants and Catholics have formed into their theology. But again, that was getting back to a woman, that was the mixture of their nature, the connection with nature. So it was partly that as well. But again, it was basically out of control. I mean, look at it, like example, in again, I go back into the political situation, and today in Iran, where of all countries other than Israel, the possibility of becoming a democratic state, there is very much elements of their society that like thirst to become democratic. And when that bubble keeps on moving up to wanting again to become more modern, to become more not just modern, but a pluralistic, democratic society, and remove the yoke of tyranny of their clerics of being a theocracy. What did they first do? I don't know if you people are watching the news, but they've been trying to. They got I guess they would call them the veil police or the clothing police, and they're pushing women to make sure they put their veils on. They're pushing again and push down on women because they know if they push down the woman, that's already half taken care of. It's almost like the woman having their own mind. You know. So now I'm going to overview and get move into another area, which I was just about to get into. But again, I just want to reemphasize this very situation with religion and women. And the true nature is that they have been deliberately removed from scriptures and or put down from scriptures and put down from their own organized religions, and I'm including also East and West as well, because it was out of control. It had nothing really to do with the true essence of spirituality. Because the true spirituality, now I'm going to go back into another spiritual sense, women, in an essence, in fact, it's sort of ironic. I remember in part of the Zohar, that says that like woman soul, when your woman is born with her soul within a woman's embodiment, she is already, which you people already know, her intuitiveness or clairvoyancy, she's already aware, that's that feminine side, which I'll get into, she's already connected to the other side, the other spirit. She's more of a, have awareness than the mask of the male, who's still locked into a more of a cognitive area. She's more open, and because of that, she is actually, essentially, when they say when a woman is born and a male is born, that the woman is already spiritually evolved more than a man at the very moment of that embodiment. Not necessarily that it's all the case, you know, because I'm here generalizing, but that's what it's basically emphasizing, that it's the very essence. So, you know, it's like, you know, you hear, again, now, you know, getting back to the feminine side and the masculine side of spirituality, and that's part of that emphasis of what woman, of the female side of the true essence of spirit, you know, and now I'm separating those two from the I'm going to try to separate from the male and the female situations from the real spiritual essence, because this is just flesh, which does have carry spirit, but the real true essence of soul has no real sexuality. There is a there can tend to be in a soul have a masculine side or more masculinity, only because it's been consistently, for example, a soul that's consistently going in and out of a masculine body already has impressions of being more masculine, being more male. And same thing for a woman. If there's a soul that constantly reincarnates back into a female soul, and there may be that's out of choice because it feels more comfort, and that's a choice of that soul, and it's going to be more feminine. So there's that side. But the true essence of, like, soul, of what they talk about, feminine, the feminine side, it has nothing when they say to a guy not taking his gonads away and say, hey, you have to get more in touch with your feminine side. It's not meaning you got to be, you know, wear a dress and put lipstick on. It's really referring to your emotional side and not as a negative. By the way, they use that emotional thing sometimes as a negative too. But actually it's a positive, because that emotional side is how you are intuitive. That's your feminine side. Get in tune with your emotions. Get in tune your feelings. Because that's very much a part of you. If you push those down, they're still going to be in there. So it's the duality. And the same token also with women. The cognitive side, maybe, you know, you have to have a balance. So get in tune with your emotional side and embracing that, but at the same time, your cognitive side and in doing on that as well, and not feeling like a little ditzy, you know, being focused. That's the more cognitive thing, very focused on certain, and grounded is more of the cognitive sense. So you need to do that both sides. That's the masculine and feminine side. Now, I'm generalizing again on both essences on the spiritual side, but that's really the emphasis when they talk of that. And it's not like, you know what I'm saying. But again, like, there has been a situation where it has been removed from what the true empowerment of woman and the feminism and what that really means. And like I said, the real empowerment, and I had said this in a prior show about self-worthiness, actually my show last 2 weeks ago, where I dealt with what was integrity and self-worthiness and having self-esteem, it very much so reflects into our society and our religious consciousness as well. So if you have an empowerment of who you are, then you're not going to have problems with your masculine or feminine femininity. You know, of your nature, of who you are. You know, you embrace what you are. And that is really the truth, the truthfulness of it. You know, it's just, if a woman, you know, they obviously, hey, no problems wearing, looking hot and beautiful and sexy, and, but when you utilize that only as your sexual power, you're forgetting the rest of you. You're forgetting the rest of what's within you. You know, your own cognitive skills, your own intuitiveness that you have within you, and embracing those issues, embracing the other forms of empowerment of who you as an identity. You know, it's like like Frida Kahlo, the great artist, and if you watch the dynamics that happened with her with Diego Garcia, what happened, the dynamic relationship that she had with her own husband, yet she empowered herself through, and it happened because out of pain. She empowered herself throughout her paintings, though she was living in Latin America in a society that women didn't have equality, didn't have the same situations. And she empowered herself, and so therefore she was looked at as an oddity. And that's the problem. And that is got to be pulled apart. And I know it's taking layers and layers. For example, I believe that if, and I'm not throwing out who I want to become president, but I'm just saying, for example, if Hillary Clinton became president, being the first woman president, and I say woman only because that's an emphasis in our society, it would change the vibration within our own society into a positive, because it would move the empowerment, or men will have to relate to a woman being in power and deal with their own self-worthiness to relate to that. Just the same factor, women will have to go, wait a second, I can be even president of the United States. That says a lot, even for that little girl. I mean, that would change fundamentally a lot of certain vibration. Not totally, but it'll be a start. And it has happened. I mean, in our societies, for example, like I know living in Israel, they had Golda Meir, who was the prime minister. Yet even within their society, they're more, they have a feminine embracement of women having more power, ironically, than even in the U.S. I saw that on a daily basis. I mean, women are commanders in the army, and they have their own empowerment. There may not be generals, and that's out of obvious factors. I mean, that's and I'm not going to get into that either. That's a real, you know, about military situation. But and everybody has their reasons, for obvious reasons. I mean, if a woman gets captured by the enemy, what will happen to her as opposed to a man? But there's the societal change. Example, even in Palestinian society, if a woman had empowerment, there wouldn't be the hating. She wouldn't send off her kids to be strapped on with bombs to kill other little kids. She has no real empowerment. And that's where you hear about the Hamas and the Islamic Jihadists and all that stuff pushing down, trying to recapture that society. And that's because if you push down the woman, you've already controlled half the population. Therefore, now you just have to worry about the other half. Therefore, they can continue that same situation. So if there is a society where women were lifted up as an equality, that would quickly, very dynamically change the vibration of that society. I mean, this is the problem. Like, for example, in Asia, it's had struggles of change within it. It had a duality. I mean, in the Philippines, where women are actually not, they've had women presidents, like Aquino, but then their own society hasn't really evolved that much toward a more of an equality situation. Yet it has a duality of it. Even, like I said, within Catholicism, which is very embraced within amongst the Philippines, it's still subjugated. So it's not the ends of all means in a political sense. Like in the U.S., if that would happen, it would change, but it would be a very start. And so basically, that's my whole spiel here, is the empowerment issue. Again, it all comes back to self-worthiness. And if women empower themselves, then men would have to really have a real empowerment for themselves by accepting that. And then that would change societal realm as well. It would actually change the vibration around the planet. Again, if we had obviously self-esteem, then we wouldn't have a lot of situations we would have in our modern society. We would move into like a Star Trek experience where economy wouldn't be the subject, and there wouldn't be poverty and wars, and I could go on and on and on about that. But that's the real crux. You know, that's the real essence. You know, the empowerment issues. And I think that's like real important. I think that's where women, and you're hearing it from a guy here, having empowerment. And like, again, men will tend to feel insecure about it, but that's their problem. They will have to learn to empower their own self-worthiness to relate to that. It's like having a woman boss. How could you relate to having a woman boss? How could you relate to, for example, what if your wife was making $100,000, $1 million, and you're only making $40,000-$50,000? You're doing eight. How would it relate if it was flipped around? You know, let's say if you're the wife was a multimillionaire making millions of dollars a year, and the husband was working 9 to 5, making $30,000 to $40,000 to $20,000 a year. How would his own ego relate to that? Could he handle it? Again, that would be a test of his own self-worthiness. It's something he would relate to. And this is what I'm talking about. If it was flipped, moved around, I'm not saying, oh, also now we're a matriarchal society instead of a patriarchal society, but an even society, it would change the dynamics of the vibrations in our spiritual sense. And this goes within religion as well. It fundamentally changed the dynamics within organized religions because, again, you will have to have the rabbis will have to embrace women rabbis. The imams would have to have women imams. The priests and they're going to have to be a woman pope. I mean, basically, it would be a confrontation of organized religion, but then it would be a good confrontation because it would open the doors for a real truthfulness of spirituality as a told to the lies that are embellished and permeated from organized religions. I mean, it would change. Society would change. And on for the good toward a movement with a higher vibration, again, towards self-worth. And it goes back again in full circle what I'm talking about, why all this stuff was done. Why was all the organized religion societies consistently, methodically, both in cultural as well as religious forum, try to make women less or make them feel less when the reality is on the contrary. Very simple. Control half the population. They got them under control. Now we just have to worry about the rest. So that's the real essence of feminism. Not saying they're equal in this essence of they're the same. We are of two different species. We have a masculine side and a feminine side. You know, it's just the very nature. Some less, there are more, like, there could be men who are more feminine, and there are more women who are more masculine characters. And, you know, like, it's not being a generalization, but on the general essence, there is a difference. And instead of embracing those differences and also making an equitable situation for both, it's been opposite. Because I think it's hurt both on the masculine side as well by putting women on the lower ranks, so billions of years or whatever, because it's only hurt themselves because it's been an illusion of control. Like I said, control is an illusion. And those who create that illusion, they themselves, when they believe in their own religion, they have lost their own self-esteem as well. They're, you know, it's like they become their own Frankenstein. They've created their own monster, and they're part of it. So this is for Mother's Day, you know, for all those mothers out there, you know, all the women out there that you know, somebody tells you you're, you know, that you have to feel that you have to consistently, you know, hell, you can look sexy and beautiful and all that, but that's one part of you. That's not all of you. And to embrace your self-worthiness. And I know it's the hardest thing to remove insecurity of situation. Everybody has a bit of insecurity, a bit of self-worthiness they have to embrace. Because as that embracement happens, your love vibration increases. It'll happen. And, I mean, if it was to the key where your vibration of self-worthiness, self-love and love was so high, you wouldn't be in this embodiment on this planet. So again, I just, that was my basically underlying factor I was trying to relate to. And as I come to a very closing close at the end of this show here, I want to first again thank all my listeners out there and future listeners who will listen on down the line. And I want to wish happy Mother's Day to all those mothers out there, including my mom and my daughter, and oh, by the way, I'm a granddad. Been there for about 8 months now. And I wish everybody, thank you very much for listening to my show. And I want to thank again BBS Radio for having me have my show. And again, I just want to make the reiterate two announcements I had done earlier. First of which, if you all can tune in 2 weeks from now, because my show, you know, is every other Friday, I will have a special guest, actually my first guest. I have a couple guests lined up, one each month I'm doing. My first guest is a blogger, but he blogs on a unique blog where it's not a political blog. It's called MyUFO.com blog. You guys, you all got to check it out. I mean, if you want to be read, entertained, everything. I mean, he's got it. Like I said, it's like the crooks and liars. Like how they have the video blogs and they have all these shows and then also the writings and styles. He's very much like that, but on the deals with paranormal, like haunted houses and UFOs and ghosts. And his name, by the way, is Lewis Martin. I'm having him on my show in my next show in 2 weeks. On the 25th, I'm pretty excited about that. And then, I also want to make another announcement. Of course, this is out now. Again, I'm having a book signing event. So any of you are on your way to this lustrous town of Las Vegas, and if you want to, after putting some coin into the Luxor, the MGM, or any of these conglomerates and feed their belly of the beast, you know, and you want to take your chance at win the millions, if you ever can get around, you can always go down to the west side, because I'm having a book signing event from 1 to 5 p.m. Again, it's 1 to 5 p.m. on tomorrow at the Psychic Eye Bookstore, which is located, by the way, at 6848 West Charleston in Las Vegas, like I said. And the cross sheets is on Rainbow and Charleston. If you come on down, have a little chat. It's very casual, very kickback. And also check out my book, or about me, if you want to read about my book, When the Angels Have Risen, with this phenomenon of doing extraterrestrials and deals with politics and religion. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. By the way, my character is, one of my main characters is a woman who has empowerment, but there's a twist to the story to that, so check that out. And again, I want to thank you all for listening to my show, and I wish you all the best, and God bless you all. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.